Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
Like Jake and Elwood, Norm's on a mission from God. You never mess with a guy's beer. Celebrating Norm's tarpon on fly. Going over the definition of misinformation. And does Happy Bay and football have a connection? All this week on the Real Guy Podcast.
Clear the airways. The Lunker Dog is on the air.
Are you ready? This is the Real Guy Podcast.
Thanks for listening to this week's episode of the Real Guy Podcast. This week we have Captain Norm from the Nautical Ventures Weekly Fisherman on 9:40 a.m. every Saturday morning. So explain to me how you could walk in the Lunker Dog Studios, hand a guy a Monte Cristo.
Yeah.
And then tell me you failed at everything today. You just handed.
I really did.
You did not. You handed me a Monte Cristo. If nothing else, that should make your day like a win.
All right. Well, let me. First of all, the Monte Cristo is a thank you for putting me on my first fly rod caught tarpon. So thank you.
Oh well.
That's welcome. What that. However, I was on a mission from GAD.
Like the Blues Brothers.
Like the Blues Brothers. Elwood.
Great.
We're on a mission from GAD.
Jake and Elwood.
Jake and Elwood. I was on a mission from God to find a six-pack of original Michelob beer. Original Michelob.
Right.
With the gold leaf on it.
Right.
Okay. And it was one of the most heavily distributed beers in the 70s and 80s. It's class. All right. What made me think about it was the other day. I saw Bill Demler posted an old picture of him with a Michelob. And I'm like, whatever happened to Michelob? Original Michelob. You got Michelob Ultra everywhere.
Right.
They got a Michelob Amber Bock.
Right.
They've got some kind of weird, goofy Michelob Light Gold. But they don't have, there's no distributorship for original Michelob. They don't have it.
Nobody here has original Michelob?
I found it on the west coast of Florida.
Where?
I told you, I was on a mission from GAD. I went to four different stores today before I came over here. Four. I started at Crown. They didn't have it. I went to Publix. They had every goofy beer you can imagine. Everything. Except Michelob.
No Michelob.
No original Michelob. They even had Miller Genuines. Okay? But they didn't have any Michelob.
Right.
All right? I went to 7-Eleven because the only reason I went to 7-Eleven was because I actually went online and I said, where can I get Michelob original? And they said 7-Eleven online. And it was on the internet, so, you know, it must be true. Went to 7-Eleven. Not there. Struck out at 7-Eleven. Who strikes out at a 7-Eleven? I did. Okay, so then I said, all right, I'm going to go to ABC Fine Wine and Spirits.
ABC Fine Wine and Spirits.
Yep.
That's
which
a
is,
big place.
Which is a big place. They're a sponsor for Mike's Weather Page. Little shout out to them. And a little shout out to Mike's Weather Page. Y'all should be paying attention now as hurricane season is really kind of starting to ramp up and the tropics are getting active. And they didn't have it.
Mike's Weather Page.
But they didn't have, but what the guy at ABC said was that there's no distributorship for it on the east coast of Florida. So you have to go to the west coast of Florida or call a distributor and find out if there's maybe like a little mom and pop that's bringing it in.
Right. So long story short.
So they sell cigars and I said, well, I can't bring the Michelob original in, so I'm going to bring in some original Monte Cristos.
Well,
so there you go.
Well, I'd much rather have a Monte Cristo than a Michelob.
Well,
and Am I mistaken when I'm saying that the company that's making Michelob now is the same company that made Bud Light, like AmBev or some country?
Well, it might be an Anheuser-Busch product. I don't know.
Well, you know, there's like...
I'm not sure. It's been a while.
Well, there's this other company that is now, you know, Anheuser-Busch.
Right.
And I can't remember the name of it. So I think it's AmBev or something.
InBev, I think. Yeah, yeah.
And there's a whole bunch of people that are boycotting the Bud Light thing, and I'm not saying that they're right or wrong for it, but then they'll turn around and have a Milk Ultra, which is the same fucking company.
Yeah, yeah. No, it is. I mean, people that... Listen, that's a cultural thing. I mean, you just don't screw with America's beers.
Did you switch? Did you switch from Bud Light to something? Were you a Bud Light drinker?
I really wasn't. I was always a Coors Light guy.
Right.
So my preference is Coors Light or Amstel Light.
So you didn't,
which I think is a really good so light
you
did, beer.
You really had no participation.
I didn't care.
You had no participation in the Bud Light boycott thing.
The extent of my participation in the Bud Light thing is to look at all these fools that are making a big deal of it and going, all right, well, that's fine. We're not going to drink that beer anymore. And you know what? You can screw with America a lot. And we're going to talk a lot about that today. But the one thing you don't do is you don't screw with America's beers. You want to piss off some old boys? Okay. Screw with his beer.
Yeah, that's true.
Okay, and what do they lose? Like $6 billion in market share? Some insane amount of money.
Now, they lost a lot. It was a big deal. I think it should have been a big deal. I was a Michelob Ultra drinker due to my fatness.
Yeah.
Right?
I think that tastes like swill.
Yeah, it's not great.
It's not a good... There's better light beers.
And Bud Light, in my opinion, was horrible as far as the taste goes.
Yeah.
But regardless, I wasn't a Bud Light drinker, but I was a Mick Ultra drinker.
Yeah.
Now I'm just drinking...
What are you drinking now?
I'm drinking Miller Lite.
Miller Lite, yeah, that's fine.
I'm drinking Miller Lite. One more calorie than an Ultra. That's it.
And it tastes great.
And I don't know, like that whole... the whole Bud Light thing. But I was at a friend's house up in the Boston area.
In Boston?
Yeah. And
you went up there. What are they drinking up there in Boston?
Well, my buddy Fran up there.
Shinnebuck.
My buddy Fran.
No, that's Texas. I'm sorry.
My buddy Fran out there.
Ankerstein.
At like 11 a.m., we were over there saying goodbye to him, and we were returning a whole bunch of tuna tackle to him.
Yeah.
Fran has a basement. They all got basements. But Fran's basement, there's a section of it that is God's gift to tackle.
Oh.
And Fran's got all the best shit.
Really?
All the spreader bars. He's got 130s. He's got 80s. He's got 50s, all the way down to 30s.
Nice.
He's all geared up, and my cousin Eric and I hit him up all the time. We go over to his little...
Yeah, but does he fish it?
He fishes it.
Because there's guys that just have all the stuff, but sometimes they don't even have a boat.
He's not a hardcore or nothing. Okay. But if you remember the bluefin tuna video that we did in the old YouTube days.
Yeah, yeah.
That 200-plus pounder we
yeah,
got.
Yeah,
that
yeah,
was with
yeah.
Fran.
Okay, all right,
that
cool.
was my dog. Yeah. So anyway, we're over there at Fran's house and totally taking advantage of all his tackle that he has. And he asked me if I needed a beer. Actually, we were returning the tackle.
Okay.
And he asked me if I needed a beer. I heard, you know, it's 11 o'clock.
Of course.
11 o'clock in the morning.
Absolutely.
You know, on
what
vacation.
What is too early to drink a beer?
It's never too early to drink a beer.
Okay.
But, so he reaches in and he hands me out a Miller High Life. Not a Miller Lite.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, not an Ultra.
Yeah.
But a High Life.
Was it a tall boy or was it just a regular?
Just a regular 12-ounce right, in the clear bottle. Okay.
And in the bottle. Nice.
And I was like, man, that's old school.
Nice.
That's old school. And then he proceeded to tell me how he's only doing the original beers.
Mm-hmm.
He says you'd rather have one good original because he's not a big beer drinker.
Yep.
He drinks one or two a day. He says he's doing Miller High Life. And I haven't had a Miller High Life, and I can't tell you how long.
Dude, I almost brought some over.
And it's
I did. I almost brought a Miller High Life over.
Got a lot of flavor.
Well, they have them in these tall boys.
They got a lot of flavor.
Yeah, that you see all the drunks on the streets.
Well, when you go from Ultra to Miller Lite to Miller High Life.
Well, that's a big step.
It's a lot of flavor.
That is. That's a lot of flavor. Goddamn right. That's what we drink up here. All right. So anyway, I didn't find it. I actually didn't buy anything because I just kind of figured, well, you know what? That's just a loss. You know, we're just losing so much and we just don't have, you know, I just didn't buy any beer. But I bought these cigars.
And it's a celebratory cigar.
It is. It's a and you know something? That's a great tradition, cigar tradition. You know, it goes back a long, long ways. Guys have been celebrating momentous occasions for a very long time with cigars. So well, this is one.
Well, besides getting you up at the crack of dawn, what was your favorite part about getting your tarpon on fly?
Just the whole experience of being on the boat with Captain Jeff and Captain Tim. And, I mean, that was the first time I ever fished with Tim.
It was fun, right?
So it was a great time. Actually, we caught two on – well, you caught one first.
Right.
Then I caught two
right.
on fly. And
then we called it a night.
Well, but we started in another spot, and we whacked the piss out of the jacks, and I caught a snook.
Did you get a slam on fly?
I did. No, not on fly, but I got a slam. That was also my first slam, inshore slam. Yeah.
Which would be the Which would be the Fort Lauderdale trash slam, which is
tarpon, snook, and jack. Jacks. Why would you call it a trash slam?
Dude, I'm only...
not really a trash slam.
I'm like appeasing to the Andy Mill crowd, to the Keys people. You know what I mean?
Well, but those guys, a tarpon, a bonefish, and a permit is a slam.
Right. And they look down upon us city folk, and they're out there chasing around the big three while we're slumming it with a couple jacks and barracudas and stuff.
But you know what? We've had some monumental catches here in the Real Guy Network here in the last couple of months, really, starting with, you know, my Blue Marlin, and then TJ Ralph stepped up his game, and he went out there and dragged a real spread and caught himself a Blue Marlin.
TJ's coming in for a podcast.
Okay, all right, so we won't get too much into that. So congratulations to TJ. And then my kid got his first tarpon.
He did.
That was awesome. That was a great experience. And, I mean, he was just, you know, he was all lit up. And I remember after we got off the boat, he looks at me, he goes, "Dad," he says, "those things get up to be like 100 pounds. And I said, "Yeah." I said, "Even bigger than that." And he says, "What do they fight like?" I said, "Well,
he's ready for a big one now."
Yeah, he's ready. He thinks he's now you got him. Now you got him hooked. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. But that was a great fish to start him out on, and you know, teach him the basics and everything else like that. And then what else? Drew caught himself a big snook on fly.
He got.
Did you see that?
He got snook and tarpon on fly.
Yeah,
from the beach in the same week.
Did he get a jack?
I don't know. I bet he did.
I bet he slammed in the surf, a surf slam.
Well, I don't know if that counts. It's not. I mean, you got to do
it. It's not really.
You got to do it in 24 hours.
Yeah, yeah. Oh,
but
yeah.
He did get tarpon and snook on fly off the beach. The fly fishing thing's kind of taken over for us, at least recreationally.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm getting a lot of clients that are doing more fly fishing nowadays, but recreationally, like, I've been down to the beach doing the pre-pot action. I've probably gone 20 times this summer so far.
Really?
And what I mean by gone is, like, I stroll out of here, you know, at about 4:30, 5 o'clock.
Yeah.
Usually after a rainstorm.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'll roll down to the beach for like an hour, hour and a half.
Yeah.
I get a little exercise in and walk down the beach. But my method this year has been 100% fly. I haven't gone there and fished bait once. I haven't fished artificial once. I've been fishing fly. So I roll down there, and then I'll walk maybe a mile, mile and a half with my fly rod.
Yeah.
And I've been getting in some decent shots on the snooks have been big in pre-pod this year, if you haven't noticed.
I haven't been to the beach yet. Well, I need to go.
But you've been seeing everybody's pictures.
Yeah, yeah.
And, I mean, when I mean big...
12 pounds, 15 pounds.
Yeah, 12 pounds, 10 pounds. Those are big beach...
Those are good beach snooks.
Those are big pre-pod snooks.
Yeah.
I don't care what anybody tells you. We're usually catching 3-4 pounders down there.
Well, have you ever noticed... And I saw that the Dolphins won't want preseason game. But have you, the other day, and this got me thinking about it, have you noticed that preseason football and pre-pod takes place at the same time. Do you think there's any coincidence in that?
Yeah. I mean, there's some coincidence.
You know?
It's just the way that God made the world evolve. I mean, we made the world go around.
I think there's definitely some scientific, evidence to show that those two things happened at the same time for a reason. Okay.
And what do you think the reason might be?
I don't know. I'm not smart enough to answer that question.
But you're just feeling it.
I mean, think about it.
You're feeling like an inner force.
Okay, think about it. And then at the time when pre-pod sort of ends is when the mullet run starts. And that's about the same time that regular football starts ramping up.
Right.
There's a tie between our bait and our football. There's a tie in there. I don't know what it is. There's a coincidence there.
You're feeling some sort of inner force, some sort of
connectivity. I don't know what it is. I don't know what it is. It's like a force in the universe that I'm not smart enough to explain.
So you know what I'm not smart enough to explain?
What's that?
Misinformation. So, like, I'm thinking to myself, I'm like, all this bullshit that's been going on in the media for the last, call it 6 years, 7 years, or whatever.
Uh-huh.
And then the whole driver to this is about misinformation.
Yeah.
So I go online and I put in misinformation to Google. I want to find out what it actually means.
Did your computer start smoking?
No. A few things came up.
Okay. Like what?
But they contradicted one another.
Well, that's because it's misinformation. It's supposed to be contradictory in nature.
Well, like, one of the definitions says that, I wrote it down, but I need my glasses to see it.
Mm-hmm.
So, it is the false information that is purposely spread in order to mislead.
False information that's purposely spread to mislead.
To mislead. Okay. All right, so I thought I had it.
Right? That's also called propaganda if it comes from the media.
And wouldn't it just be lying?
Oh, you can't call it that.
You can't say lying.
You can't say that.
You just say misinformation.
Okay, the only way that that's appropriate to apply that specific term is if you are talking about politicians and weathermen, who are the only people that I know that can make a living out of lying to you.
Misinformation.
Okay?
Okay.
All right? But you can't use that term. Like, if I call you a liar,
right?
That's a very incendiary thing to do. Okay? If you call somebody else's... If you call somebody else's relative, hey, your father is a liar, those are fighting words.
Right.
Okay? So you have to be very careful about who you're talking to when you apply that term. Now, some people, it's okay, but it's very few. Dude, did you just certify your trash can over there?
My trash can's been certified. You don't have a certified...
I didn't notice that.
You don't have a certified trash can?
I guess I should certify it.
Well, yeah.
All right. Well, I'm sorry. We got... I just noticed the RTD sticker on this old trash can.
And I got the Skinny Jenny, which is Musso's vote on there.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, if you have the opportunity to certify your trash can you think of one good reason not to certify your trash can?
No.
Mitchell's got his outdoor trash can certified down the street.
Yeah.
And I go by there, I got a look and I see the RTD sticker on it. It's kind of cool.
All right.
So anyway, to answer your question, yes, that is a certified trash can.
It's class.
It is class. It's almost as classy as sitting here sporting the piss out of my fresh Monte Cristo.
Yeah, man. It's a good smoke.
So was the tarpon on fly? Was that everything you thought it was going to be?
I used to fly fish a lot.
Right.
When I was much younger. And for whatever the reason, I just got away from it. And, you know, seeing you guys out there in the surf doing it, I started thinking to myself, man, why have I given it up? And I've caught a lot of fish on fly. Caught bonefish. I've caught big king salmons on fly. I've caught just all kinds of stuff. But I'd never had the opportunity to catch tarpon on a fly. And I don't have a lot of bucket list items anymore in my life. And that's not because I'm saying that I've done it all. It's just, for me, you know, angling achievements, I just kind of, I don't know, they just don't really mean that much to me anymore. And maybe that's because of my, you know, I've kind of lost it a little bit, my love for it a little bit. But it was rekindled. Because, I mean, when we rolled up on that one spot and I made that shot at that fish and he woofed it, he came up and woofed it, like, out of nowhere, I was just like, whoa. All right. Now I remember. And it all came rushing back.
Right.
And now it's like, you know, now I'm on eBay and I'm looking up stuff to buy and I'm looking up flies and all this kind of stuff. And it's just like, whoa, wait a minute. Hold on. You know, I went down to Sandy Moret's shop in Isla Mirada. I took a day trip with the kid down there, and I had him rig a couple of reels for me because I don't know what the hell I'm doing with it. And I hadn't even picked up a fly rod in, oh, I bet it's been 12 years.
Now, you caught that fish on your fly rod?
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. But it's amazing. I was blown away by how expensive fly fishing is now.
Expensive.
Oh my God. I mean, $700 fly rods, $800-$900 reels, which are like, why?
$9 flies.
You know, $9 fly. Why? Why is that? It's like golf. Okay? I don't understand it. Why is this? What are the materials that go into these fly rods that make them that much more expensive?
It nothing.
I don't get it.
It's not the material. It's just the guy that's buying it. The guy that's doing flies got a few dollars. Unlike us, no.
No, I mean, you know. But, I mean, you could still find reasonably priced equipment. Okay? Like that reel that I have is a White River fly reel. It's like a $140 fly reel. Okay? And it's bar stock aluminum. It's got everything that you want on a fly reel. It's got plenty of backing. It's a really nice little reel. And, I think if Abel made the same reel, that same reel would be like a 7.8 Abel.
Correct.
Okay, a 7.8 weight Abel and a 7.8 weight...
White River.
Basically the same, but it's a $500 difference.
Right, $500.
What the hell?
Dude, that's just the
thing. Is it a status thing?
The only thing I can go by is tips, okay?
Tips?
Yeah, tips. Like my average live bait guy, they tip. They do pretty good, you know? I'm not saying that they're bad tippers.
Okay.
But the average fly guy is out-tipping your bait guy.
Really?
Yep. I mean, it's not uncommon for the fly guy to give you, you know, a couple hundred, 250 on the tip.
No kidding.
Not a big deal for them.
And so it's a status thing. It's a socioeconomic...
This upcoming concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. It's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, that's WCB style, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience like it. If you can't make it into a store, just visit tecovas.com. That's tecovas.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and ship right to your door. Go to tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today.
Function.
Well, I think it makes them feel better when they finally catch their nice fish on fly because they spent more and they have more invested.
You know, there used to be a very nice fly shop here in Fort Lauderdale. It was an Orvis fly shop, and there was a lady that owned it for many years. Her name was Sandy, and I can't remember her last name. Doggone it. She's wonderful, very, very nice lady. I took her, I actually took her fishing with me one time with Mark Croca.
Doggone it.
And, yeah, and, hey, you know, I'm trying not to swear.
It's all right, doggone it.
Fuck. Anyway, so, but at any rate, that fly shop went away. I think she moved to Montana, and it seemed like, to me anyway, fly shops were just getting more and more and more expensive. And I mean, like, I was blown away. I went to Sandy's shop, and I'm like, who can afford this?
Fly guys.
Fly guys.
Fly guys can afford it.
I mean, it's crazy, the kind of money.
All right, so I got this fly guy customer. I'm not going to mention any names or anything. Nice dude. Yeah, fishes with his son. I like him.
Yeah.
We caught some fish together. He, I think he had like a 21-foot scout.
Mm-hmm. That's a big, that's a lot of money.
You're right. It's a nice boat.
Yeah.
And so anyway, he has this 21-foot scout. I took him fly fishing.
On his boat?
On my boat.
On your boat.
2 years ago.
Okay.
And then last year I didn't take him fishing, I don't think. Unless it was last year, I get my ears mixed up. But that doesn't make any difference. What does make a difference is homeboy, after fly fishing with me, sold the scout and got a Hell's Bay.
Why?
Because he's a fly fishing guy now.
All right. Well, I mean, that's okay.
So we got it. Wait, let me finish. So he got his Hell's Bay. Okay. And then we're fishing the other night. And when he booked, he was telling me about his Hell's Bay and he wanted to take his boat, which he ended up not doing and ended up taking my boat.
Okay.
And then in the course of the trip, he wanted to know if I wanted to buy his Hell's Bay. So I think he got overexcited.
Yeah, you know, that doesn't surprise me. Let me ask you a question. As a fly guy.
Fly guy.
Is it appropriate for a fly guy to use another fly guy's rod?
Well.
Like, if somebody came to you and said, Jeff, I need to borrow your fly rod. Even if he was an accomplished fly caster. Would you not feel a little uncomfortable about that? I think it's like trying to. I think it's like asking to borrow somebody's underwear. It's just a little bit. It's just a little bit inconvenient, and it's a little bit inappropriate. I think it's inappropriate.
All right, and you're right, especially for the go-to tackle. All right, so like,
all your fly tackle is go-to.
Well, let me explain. All right, so I'm using 8, 9, and 10 weights religiously right now.
Mm-hmm.
Right, 9. Is what I could walk down the beach with. I use the 8 at night for smaller fish.
Right.
And then the go-to is basically a 9 weight or a 10 weight. But anyway, those are my go-tos.
10's a heavy rod to throw consistently.
Yeah. Thank God with our tarpon fishery, we're only making a few casts a night.
Right.
But anyway, the whole idea is those are my go-tos. And I would be fairly reluctant to be like, yeah, go ahead, Norm, take one or two of them to go use. On the other hand,
I couldn't do it.
On the other hand, I have a really nice, which is probably my most expensive rig. I have a G Loomis with an Abel reel 12 weight for the big tarpon.
Mm-hmm.
I've only brought the thing out maybe 8 times in my entire life.
Yeah.
And say you were coming to catch a sailfish or a big tarpon and you needed that tackle.
Yeah.
I would encourage you to take that rig. The 12 weight.
Yeah, but I wouldn't fish it on my boat. I would fish it on your boat.
Either way, I would encourage you to use that tackle.
I don't know that I would feel comfortable doing that.
Maybe you wouldn't feel comfortable taking it, but I feel comfortable letting you use it because it's not my go-to. If you broke that shit tomorrow, right?
I couldn't replace it.
Well,
it's too expensive.
Then you shouldn't borrow it, but I'm just saying.
Yes.
I'm just saying that because it's not a go-to, if you broke it, it wouldn't bother me not to have it for 3 weeks.
Well, yeah, because you just don't use it that much.
Right, it's not a go-to.
But,
and I'm not that attached to it. Like, I haven't caught friggin' 1,000 tarpon on the friggin' thing like I have on my 9 weight.
So yeah, and you know, now of course, me being the tackle whore that I am, you know, my 9 weight is rigged with a Billy Pate anti-reverse fly reel, which is a fantastic fly reel. I've caught some big fish on it, but it's like throwing a brick. And I picked up your 9 weight, and I was like, God, this is light.
Yeah.
This is nice. So, you know, I scoured the planet like a good tackle whore does. for something that's affordable but serviceable, which is kind of my standard for you know, purchasing tackle anymore these days. And
you purchased some new fly equipment?
I did. I bought a I found it on eBay. That White River fly reel that I got, that 7.8, that's a great reel. And I beat the livid piss out of that thing. And I've caught a lot of fish on that thing. So, I mean, I really... And I've blown up some fly reels, too. I said, well, why don't I just get the next size up on this fly reel? And I found a 9.10 White River, and for $100, that's real guy shit right there.
Reddington has been doing... working class guys fly reel for a long time.
Yeah.
I had breakwaters at a Reddington's. Mm-hmm. I got the new Behemoth, which is like polyurethane or something. I don't know.
Polyurethane? That's plastic.
Yeah, it's plastic.
Really?
I don't know what the fuck it is. It comes in a weird orange color and everything.
Yeah.
But anyway, it's beefy. It's a beefy for tarpon. It's a great reel.
Okay.
And then I go with a TFO.
Yeah, that's what I've got.
Yeah, the TFO Pro 2 or whatever it is.
Yeah.
It's, you know, that whole setup.
Yeah.
Rod and reel and everything is less than 400.
And that's what it should be. This is what I'm saying. You can't buy a Loomis for less than for $400. They're all like $500-$700.
Well, you're not.
It's insane.
You're not a Loomis guy.
Wait a minute. I used to be. Let me tell you something. The best casting fly rod I ever put in my hand was a Loomis GL2. Now, this is going back a long ways. This is going back to maybe the late 80s. And I had a Scientific Angler's reel on it, a System 2 8.9 on it. And I've caught bonefish with that outfit, and I could throw it like it was an extension of my arm. It loaded beautifully, and I still, to this day, I have not picked up another fly rod that loads as nice as that old G. Loomis did. Even my TFOs don't load up like that. And I don't know. It's probably my technique, which was just sorely lacking that night that we went out. But I hadn't done it in almost 15 years.
Well, Norm, I don't think that you exactly fit the fly fishing guy's mold.
No, why would you say that?
Well, you don't have all the equipment, like all the stuff.
Like the accessories?
Well, like when you went fishing with me the other night, you had on like a regular t-shirt, like a ball cap, and you didn't have like a fly box.
Oh, I didn't look the part.
You did not look the part. You did not have the shirt with the five pockets.
So I got to step up my game.
I wouldn't say you have to step up your game. I'm just saying
I got to step up my casting game.
You're not.
Oh my God, was I rusty.
You're not fitting the mold, dude. Like North Face, Patagonia, Columbia.
You know, let me tell you something. Me,
Crocs.
No, you don't wear Crocs fly fishing.
Dude, the guy that taught me how to fly fish or did a lot of fly fishing, he sported the piss out of his Crocs.
Oh, jeez. All right, so let me just tell you something. I used to do a fly trip every year to the Pere Marquette River in Upper Michigan. And the king salmons would get in that river in the fall. And the fall up there being late September into first week or two of October. And we stayed at this beautiful lodge called the Barothy Lodge. And it was me and Ross and a couple of these other guys from Alabama. And we'd go up there and we'd knock the piss out of the river run salmon. And believe it or not, most of our fishing was done at night in those streams.
Really?
Which was an amazing experience. And it was, most of it was done. I mean, we'd get started. We'd probably walk out of the lodge around 2:30 in the afternoon, 3:00 in the afternoon. And by the time we got geared up and put our waders on and got down into the stream and the river, rather, it was going on 4:00. And this is, of course, 4:30, 5:00. And this is, sun's starting to just set down in the west.
Take you a solid hour to prepare.
Oh, absolutely, because you got all these accessories.
Right.
You know, you got to put those waders on. You got to have the right socks. You got to have you got to take your regular shoes off. You got to get all geared up. Okay, and that takes, you got four or five guys going at the same time. So, I mean, It was a production just to get ready.
Fly fishing is a bit of a production.
It's a process, like, yes,
even,
for sure.
Even here, let me take you step by step.
Go ahead.
All right. So I'm leaving the house. Mm. Okay. So I'm gonna get my fly rod in the case.
Yeah.
With my fly reel in the case.
Yeah.
And if you look, you see how I got the fly reel?
Yeah, you got it all right there.
Right. And I got it hung on the strap. Mm-hmm. So I put the strap like this on my handlebar.
I like that.
Right? So I'm rolling down the beach like this on my handlebar.
Okay.
Then I got my man purse.
So you load all this on the bike from the house and ride over to the beach?
Right. This is how I've been rolling, getting a little exercise and a little fly fishing.
Yeah.
So I got the case for the reel and for the rod. When have you ever seen me have a case for anything?
No.
But for fly fishing,
I do. You have to.
Then I have assorted man purses.
Okay.
As my kid would call them, merses.
Merses?
Yeah.
All right.
I have medium size, which will hold.
Is that on your back?
This actually goes over my shoulder.
That goes on your shoulder, so you got that?
So I got that.
Okay.
So I'm rolling down the beach. I got this. I got that. And then I have the drink in the holder.
Okay.
Of the bicycle. Okay. In here, I got my snips. I got a box of flies. I got a leader. Change a leader.
Mm-hmm.
And that's pretty much it. And then I roll down. But considering I'm just going down to the beach fishing, it's a considerable amount of extra gear that I normally wouldn't have, and I definitely wouldn't be doing if I wasn't fly fishing.
Right, right.
So there's always an extra step, an extra element.
Okay, all right.
It's just a fly fishing thing.
It's just that's how it is. And and in order to do it, you just kind of accept that this is part of the process.
It is part of the process.
Okay. Right.
You can't do it without doing all that stuff.
Well, you saw how I rolled in.
I'm trying to remember.
I just had my rod, four-piece fly rod.
Oh,
in
I
half.
Do remember. No, they were. He put his fly rod in my truck, with the tips hanging out the top.
Yeah.
And I damn near crushed his fly rod.
Oh, I know. Yeah, that was close.
I damn near crushed his fly rod because I went to hit the back window and I heard something and it was his rod. I was like, oh, shit, I didn't.
Anyway, no, you didn't get all the way up, though.
That would be par for the course for me because I break all my fly shit. So I might as well break my friend's fly shit, too. Dude, I got like 3 broken rods.
I always did. Now, do you have backups for your fly rods?
Yeah,
I do.
I got backups.
I have,
but now I don't because half of my backups are broken.
I have a 5-weight, I have a 5-weight, an 8, and a 9, and I also have a spare 8-weight, and I might even have a spare 7 somewhere.
It's a lot of weights.
Yeah. Well, but that's because when we went on that, when we did that salmon trip, there was always a guy who would blow up a rod in that river. There was always somebody that would blow up a rod or a reel. So I always had backups.
I always break my shit.
Yeah.
I break
But
more
we did
fly
it on
rods.
Fish.
No, a lot of the ones that I broke were on fish.
Yeah.
A lot of the ones
and
I broke weren't on
and
fish.
And that's the thing about fly tackle. It's amazing. And maybe this is one of the reasons why it's so expensive these days. Because back in the early days, we didn't really have a lot of great fly reels. And if you did, they were kind of expensive even for back then. I mean, like a Finnor number 2 was probably $300, $350.
It was a lot of money back then.
It was a lot of money back then. And, I mean, I got started with a Fluger Medalist. And I remember one year we did that salmon trip. And I said, you know what? It would be cool to catch a salmon on a Fluger Medalist because that's kind of like the reel that I got started on. Well, I brought one with me, and I hooked about, I don't know, it's probably about a 15-pound salmon, and I could hear the screws coming out of the reel. I mean, that I torqued the frame on the reel. And what a lot of people don't realize is when you're pulling on a big, heavy fish on a fly rod, the entirety of the outfit gets taxed really, really hard, including the reel, especially the reel.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I actually torqued the frame of this reel. And that wasn't the only one I did it on. I did it on some fairly, you know, fairly supposedly good equipment. I blew up an Orvis Batten Kill.
You torqued it too hot.
I torqued it too hot. I blew up an Orvis Batten Kill. I blew up a Lampson. I blew up that Pfluger Medalist. But I didn't blow up the White River. And I caught a lot of fish on that. I had my Finnor number one that my father gave me many years ago. I caught a giant fish on that one.
So let me slow you down a little bit. So catching a fish on a certain fly rig is meaningful.
Absolutely.
See, that's real flyology stuff.
That's culture.
That's how fly fishers think.
Yeah.
Like they really want to catch one on the fly that they made.
Oh, yeah. Oh, God. Well, but you know what? I feel that same way about when I rig baits. But it's the same thing. In other words, you take it, it's a purist's mentality. Okay, so you are.
So my mentality of going to discountflies.com.
That would be frowned upon in many circles.
Right, that's not real fly fishology thinking.
No. That's Kmart.
I'll come clean right now.
I don't care.
I don't tie my own flies, and I'm not spending $9 a piece for them at old Florida fly shop.
Oh, my God.
I'm buying them from discountflies.com.
Good. That's the name of it?
That's the name of it. And you can.
You got to tell me what that fly is, by the way. I still have that one.
The one that you used. That's called a shimmering minnow.
Shimmering minnow.
Right.
Okay.
A shimino.
A shimino, yeah.
Anyway.
Man, I'll tell you what, that they eat the piss out of that thing. Now, do you throw that same fly in the surf? No.
I have thrown that fly in the surf. In the surf, I like to go with a bigger fly.
A bigger fly?
Bigger, okay. Uglier fly.
Okay.
And I'm more targeting snooks in the surf than I'm targeting tarpon.
Yeah.
Even though you do get the shot at the tarpon here and there in the surf.
Yeah.
But the whole snook fishing thing with the fly on the beach...
That's a special experience.
That's a nice thing.
I've done it on the West Coast, but not on the East Coast. No, I have. I did, actually, you know what? There was a funny thing. There was back in the late 80s.
There's bait guys right now that are like sticking their finger down their throat.
They're just dying. They're like ready to shut this off.
They probably already have.
So there was a time when we were fly fishing from the pier. Okay, let that sink in for a second.
Kantner style.
Kantner was one of the guys. He was one of the guys. And he might have even been the guy that started doing it, was Kantner. Because I remember Kantner would roll out there with a fly rod, and he was just a masterful fly caster. I just remember looking at watching him throw the fly from the pier, and it was like, whoa. And
masterful.
He was. And he would catch some big snooks, because these were not the trough snooks. These were the bigger ones, the bigger females that lay out in the second trough, and they'd come down that second trough, and he'd deliver a fly down to them, and I mean it was just like whoa. And I watched him catch fish doing that. I've caught a couple like that, but the problem is you get them straight up and down, and then you got to break them off, and there goes your fly.
Right.
You know. You could walk them down to the beach, but we never did that. We just popped them.
So,
hunting boots are a critical component of any successful hunt. Whether walking a short distance to your blind or trudging miles through rugged terrain, your feet are carrying the load. Without the right boots, you could give up early and lose out on that trophy just over the ridge. At Midway USA, we make selecting boots for your next hunt easier. With just a few clicks of a mouse, you can decide on what's important, like waterproofing, insulation, size, width, and savings. For just about everything for shooting, hunting, and the outdoors, check out MidwayUSA.com.
Timmy's customer, Daniel, is beach fishing.
Yeah.
On the north side of the beach, where you're allowed to fish.
Yeah.
And a park ranger pulls up and tells him they have to go. And Daniel's debating whether or not he should go or not. And then a cop comes up and backs up the park ranger. And then Daniel says to the cop, he says, from what I understand is we're allowed to fish from the lifeguard stands north.
Mm-hmm.
And the cop says, from my understanding, you're correct, but you have to leave. And threw him
Why?
Out. Because we live in a banana republic.
Let me tell you something. I would have told that cop, you know what? Just go ahead and write me the ticket and fight it. I've said this on other podcasts. Okay, you guys are taking this shit.
You would do that under principle alone. This poor guy Daniel's down on vacation. He don't want to have to deal with this shit.
He should have told him, you know what? I'm just going to forget this. I'm going to put my fly tackle away or whatever fishing rod he was using, and I'm going to go sell crack. What the hell is wrong with fishing? This is Florida. It's what we do.
Yes.
What is wrong with these people? And they're always complaining about how kids have nothing better to do, or people have nothing better to do than to drink and to have problems and just cause all this bullshit. But they want to harass fishermen doing something that's perfectly legal, that they even recognize that's legal?
Well, since I struck a chord with you, Drew was also down there. And some lady walked up to him and took offense to him fishing on the beach.
One of these days, these are the same people that tried to outlaw beach fishing a few years ago. The same fucking people. Let one of those people roll up on me.
All right, Norm.
Please.
Norm, do not beg for confrontation. I know you're a tough guy and everything.
Hey, it would be the biggest mistake they made all year.
The fact of the matter is, we pretty much live in a banana republic at this point.
You know why? Because people think that they're entitled to certain rights. Like, they think that beach is their beach. And why is it that they think it's their beach? Because they belong to an HOA. Okay? They belong to a condo association or an HOA. Where they're paying somebody for security. So because they think that they're paying into that fund, they have the right to go and harass Daniel while he's on vacation. Just minding his business, by the way.
Fishing. With his son.
Okay? And why? What gives them the right to think that they own that?
They don't.
Politician is telling them that?
They don't. But they do know that they can control what the cops say and do.
Because they're paying that cop to
do
that.
And it happened to a client and I fishing the Intercoastal down by Hollywood. What's the name of the crab joint?
Billy's.
Billy's Crab.
Yeah, you told me about
that. So behind Billy's Crab, there's some lights back there. And we're fishing them one night.
Yeah.
And they told me I couldn't fish there.
Call the Coast Guard.
And I says, no, you're mistaken. I can fish there.
Yeah.
And then the cop comes out to tells me I can't fish there.
Yeah.
And he didn't know the laws, didn't care about the laws. All he knew was that Billy's was paying him time and a half.
Yep.
So therefore, Billy's called the shots.
Yeah.
And he said basically, whatever you want. Now, that's where I say we live in a banana republic. Now, being a real banana republic's a little harsh and everything, but...
No, it's not. We do live in a banana republic, but I think it's for a different reason. Because our politicians have become so corrupt... Right. That has trickled down to every pseudo, quasi-governmental, regulatory asshole that walks the face of the planet on down to your condo commandos, like Ed Rebholz.
Well, and then these people are partners with the media.
And they're partners with the media.
Right.
Okay. And that's how it starts. Because the media drives the narrative. So whatever the media says dictates the, what's the word I'm looking for, mindset of the public.
Of the sheep.
Of the sheep. They have the wherewithal and the means, but they don't have the drive to go out and find out facts for themselves. So they rely on their traditional sources like news outlets or politicians or condo commando presidents. Why does this exist? We live in an information age where everybody has a computer, can go online, can look up something, okay, and find out whether or not, in fact, that's true. But they don't do it. They don't do their due diligence.
I know you're a due diligence guy.
I'm a due diligence guy.
I've actually referred to your due diligence theories over and over again on the podcast.
Yeah.
But what I did see this week, did you see that country, that redneck hillbilly kid from West Virginia?
Jason Aldean?
No, Aldean's a country singer.
Yeah.
This guy is more like a hillbilly. Richmond.
What's the song?
North of Richmond.
Rich Men North of Richmond.
Right.
Which is a straight shot at Washington, D.C.
Right. It's about D.C. It's about the Banana Republic.
Yes.
It's about how everybody's busting their ass and these guys are supporting them.
Yeah.
But the media ran with it like, oh, my God, this has a racial element to it. It's a white.
Not at all.
You know
what the racial element to it
there
was?
There is no racial element.
Yes, there is.
And the people that defended the guy were parts of the media. There were all sorts of minorities. It was like, hey, wait a second. Don't crucify this guy. Mm-hmm. This guy's a singer and an artist, and he's delivering a message.
Yes.
And we all got it.
Yes.
And it didn't matter what color you were or what identity you were or whatever.
Wait, hold on. Everybody You're saying got the it. Media defended that guy?
I'm saying that the media went after that guy, and then people.
Okay.
Like you and I.
Yeah.
That have a small little bit to do with the media, like maybe have a podcast or have an internet show or a YouTube show or whatever. They were all like, bullshit. Well, this guy is singing a song that we all feel.
What would happen?
That we can all relate to.
What would happen if Hank Williams Jr., Bo Cephas himself, wrote "A Country Boy Can Survive in Today's Day and Age"? He would get crucified. And that song's been there for 40 years. So why all of a sudden are people up in arms about a new guy with a new song when we've been singing and talking about the same exact thing for the last 60, 70, 80 years?
Because that's
It's nothing new.
That's the difference between used to living in a country. Used to live in a country that was totally
we had
cool.
balls.
Well, people were totally cool with artists
we
saying what they
balls.
Wanted to say. Now we live in a country which is more like a banana republic where the media wants to control everybody and their thoughts.
Yeah.
And that's what I mean by this.
How would
whole
you like to
banana
be a comedian?
Republican.
How would you like to be a comedian in today's day and age? How could you do that? Don Rickles would be hung up by his Buster Browns.
I think it's all changing. I think everybody's getting over it.
You think so?
I think so.
I hope you're right.
I think we're going to get on a good path.
Well,
I mean, we went through a really bad path with all this misinformation stuff that we went through in the last election, the BLM stuff, the riots, the January 6th stuff. It's all had this huge spin and everything. But we were fed so much horseshit by the media for so long that now normal everyday people can see right through it and they're like, we're not going to do this again. We're not going to fall for this crap again. We don't believe what you say. We know what you say is horseshit.
Well, here's okay. So
misinformation.
So here's the rub on everything that you just said. I think generally speaking, you probably are right. I think people are fed up with it. Having said that, if we truly do live in a banana republic, which I believe that we do, then it's not going to matter. Public opinion doesn't matter in a banana republic. The only thing that matters in a banana republic is that you subvert the will of the people. And misinformation is where it starts. When it comes to elections is where it ends. Because it doesn't matter who the people really vote for. Well, I don't care if you're voting for the president or you're voting for your mayor or your congressman. It doesn't matter. Okay, it only matters what you can control. All right? And there is no two ways about it that the will of the people are being subverted by the media. And you know why? Because they're afraid. Whoever is paying for the media, whoever is driving that narrative, because it's not the media itself, it's whoever's paying the media.
It's the money behind the
media. Okay, it's the money behind the media. Whoever that is, and I don't care if you're a Democrat or a Republican, it makes no difference.
None.
Okay? It's all the same bullshit. Because They're the ones that are afraid of what you guys, like you and I and anyone else, are thinking. We can't have a true representative republic anymore. And there's no better study on that than American politics and campaigns in particular. And you watch.
No, I feel you. And we're coming up on an election year, so we're getting ready to get fed a whole bunch of horse shit, which is already happening.
Dude,
how does there only one side to the Trump story when it comes to him getting indicted?
Well, wait a minute. Let me ask you a question. Let me back up on that. All right. Do you think that he would even be indicted if he wasn't running for president?
No.
Not a chance. And I don't want to get into the Trump versus Biden thing because they're both. Let me tell you something. I wish they could both lose. I think they're both terrible for this country right now. Wow. But I'm just telling you right now, the will of the people is being wholly subverted.
Correct.
Okay. And the powers that be on both sides of the aisle are deathly afraid of how you and I will vote.
That's true. Speaking of a little bit of politics and our good old boy DeSantis.
Ron.
So Ron.
Ron looks like Ron's going to be our governor for a while.
Okay. Okay.
He's not going anywhere.
I'm somewhat happy with that. Yeah. But what's your take on he extended the snapper season for 2 more weeks?
There shouldn't be a snapper season at all. There's plenty of American red snappers. You can catch them like grunts in the Gulf right now, anywhere. I worked for 5 years offshore in the Gulf of Mexico running crew boats. And at the end of the day, we'd tie up to a rig and hang off the rig in the current. And I'd go down and I'd drop a jig down to the bottom and whack the piss out of them.
Right.
It's nothing to catch a red snapper. They're everywhere.
Do you think for 1 second
that it's overregulated?
That the extension on the red snapper season was nothing except to appease anglers to get votes?
Probably. I mean, why else does a politician do anything?
Exactly my point.
Okay.
Exactly.
If he really wants to get some votes, he'd start running on water.
Which he's not.
Which he's not doing. Nobody is.
Dude, he's in Iowa.
Yeah. They don't have sewage problems.
Are they in Indiana
Iowa
yet?
I don't know.
They're still in Iowa.
They were at a fair, some state fair. They were all eating cotton candy and kissing babies. But it's got to start right here at the local level. We got to get rid of this mayor. How many more sewage spills do we got to put up with before somebody raises an eyebrow? I mean, I don't understand it.
Well, and that's where the media is failing us the most.
Yeah, for us.
As Floridians.
As Floridians, betcha.
Because they're talking about, they'll talk about the 2-week extension, the red snapper thing, which means absolutely nothing.
Nothing. Less than nothing.
No one talks about, so Ron and the Tallahassee crew pat themselves on their back for spending $14.9 million on red tide initiatives. $14 million.
What does that even mean? What's a red tide initiative?
It means nothing. It means that there was $14.9 million that the state squandered on some sort of friggin' bullshit. The same way the city squandered the $3 million to clean up the Tarpon River project.
Oh, wait a minute. Hold on. But they did that. That actually happened. I mean, they had a big public ceremony.
They spent the $3 million. That happened.
And they went out there and they had a big public ceremony and it was in the paper. So it must have happened, right?
Well, that's exactly my point. The media.
That's driving the narrative.
The media, instead of telling the real story and telling how the river still polluted and how the $3 million was squandered on absolutely nothing, which was the real story, the media covered the PR story that the government wanted.
And then they sent Nancy Gassman out to try and pull the wool over all the eyes of the HOA meetings around town.
Right. And my point is I'm just comparing apples to apples. So they spent $3 million on doing nothing in that little canal.
If you
$14.9 million for the whole state.
If you let me tell you something. Oh, I get it. And let me just tell you something. I wish I had known that public ceremony was going to happen, because I would have gladly gone down there and I would have challenged each one of those public officials to jump in the Tarpon River. I mean, the Hammersheek was it was the Tarpon River to jump in the Tarpon River and take a swim. Go ahead, it's cleaned up. Do you got to worry about?
They faked it. They got on paddle boards and paddled down the canal and took pictures of people like it was okay, knowing damn well that they wouldn't touch the water.
Even the Fort Lauderdale sandbar guys are starting to wake up. Okay,
are you getting infected?
I don't understand. I don't understand how you put people in the water on that sandbar.
Mm-mm. Right. So a charter company that has one of these pontoon boats that charters people, that brings them out there and lets them swim, when they get the MRSA infection, are they going to be held liable? Because the data is there. The data is there saying that fecal bacterial level is too high.
Well, I think they could be.
Yeah, they should be.
I think they could be, and I'll tell you why. I think, first of all, I don't understand how there isn't a class action lawsuit against the city of Fort Lauderdale right now. I don't understand it. Every single time there's a sewage leak, everybody throws up their arms and goes, ah! And then that's it. And nothing gets done.
Correct.
At what point does somebody say, you know what, let's lawyer up and sue the city?
People are going to have to get sick.
Okay, will that wake up the city? I mean, John Tedder got sick. John Tedder got really sick.
So did Sue Bailey.
And Sue Bailey did, yeah. That's right. Yeah.
There's a list of other people.
Yeah.
My point is, in this banana republic that controls the media, it's not happening. The story is that.
No, it's not a story.
But what we are hearing is about the 2-week extension of the red snapper season.
What do we got here? It's almost the end of August, so we got an election cycle coming up next year. It's a little early. People are not paying attention to it. The kids are going back to school. Life's starting to suck again for a lot of people. So this is not the thing that they want to talk about right now. And unfortunately, you kind of have to time this stuff. And in the meantime, before the election cycle, I hope you don't get MRSA or your digits start falling off when you go swimming on the sandbar.
And let the misinformation begin.
Yep.
Because it is an election cycle.
It is.
And the shit that they're going to feed us. And remember, everybody, it's a bunch of shit that they're going to feed us.
Buckets and buckets of shit.
Right. For the next 14 months. Just get ready for it. Hold your nose. Listen to Norm and I on the Real Guy Podcast, being real. Because the realer you are, the more they want to shut you up. And if you don't think so, look at these country singers that are coming out with some real friggin' lyrics. And the last thing that the media wants is to hear anything that's the truth.
Yeah. Oh, no, you can't. You can't tell the truth. They won't cover the truth.
Norm, thanks for coming into the Real Guy fucking podcast.
Hey, it's
great to have you.
It was a pleasure. Run that dog,
pal.